Welcome, everybody. It is Friday. We've made it. Another week in the Donald Trump 2.0 administration is in the books, and not without some pretty extraordinary fireworks this week. I'm just going to say this much. I've got a great co-host for the first approximate hour of the afternoon. You know him well. He is the host of Amicus, a law review on Saturdays on this fine network from 9 to 11. His name is James Santel, former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin. Welcome back, James.
Maggie, good to be with you once again. As you said, quite a week, right? Exclamation points following that statement.
Quite a week. Here's what I'm doing now, Jim. I'm going to have like a Trump countdown to 200. 200 what? Not 200 days. No. 200 losses in court.
Mess.
He is approaching that number. By my last count, there's around like 180 odd court cases going through mostly federal courts for various reasons, but because it's the federal government primarily. And he's been losing most of them. So like the ticker is now going. So lots of activity this week. Jim, I wanted to just jump right in on the big one of today. Big news today. The Supreme Court, just within the last couple of hours, stepping in and has cleared the way, at least for now. Again, this is the emergency relief channel that you can use to get to the Supreme Court, aka the shadow docket. Has cleared the way for Donald Trump to revoke what a lot of people call basically immigration parole for over a half a million people that are in this country. It was an extension of legal status put into place under the Biden administration. Donald Trump revoked it. It was challenged. It was stayed initially. The appeals court put it back. Then that was appealed. And now the Supreme Court is saying this would be the largest group of individuals ever basically in the history of the United States to have their legal status here one day and gone the next without any what everyone in the back of the class.
Right. We know what those words are, right? Without something called due process and basic basic rights that are afforded everyone in this nation, whether you're a citizen or not. Maggie, you and I were chatting just a few days ago about another Supreme Court case. And at that time, you appropriately said, we've got about 350,000 Venezuelans who are now being affected by what the Supreme Court did. And today, here's your next category, perhaps, Maggie, my friend. How many things can we do that will affect immigrants and migrants in this nation? A half a million people now exposed. Again, on this shadow docket, we're not getting a statement from the Supreme Court about exactly why they're doing that. We've got some dissenting language. And once again, we've got a situation where, again, the underlying litigation continues. You and I have talked about this in the past. But the Supreme Court says, while that's going on, before we get to the merits of this, in the meantime, go ahead and begin to deport these people. 500,000 people in this nation as of a few hours ago.
Here, this is according to the Washington Post. The decision is the second time this month, as Jim has rightly pointed out, that the high court has given Trump officials permission to terminate the program that protects immigrants fleeing countries racked by war, economic turmoil, while litigation on those programs, in other words, the validity of those programs, continues. The justices also allowed the administration to revoke temporary protective status from a different group of nearly 350,000 Venezuelans. That means in total, legal one day, you wake up the next and you're not, and masked people that don't have to identify themselves may be banging down your door in the middle of the night to disappear you. We're talking about a total of 880,000 people, nearly a million people in this country, for whom there is apparently no legal recourse. Literally, they can be disappeared in the middle of the night.
They are out there.
Am I understanding this correctly?
I think you are. I don't think I know that you're identifying that exactly correctly, Maggie. And again, it doesn't help a lot. But we've got Ketanji Brown Jackson, who is the voice out there, saying, "What are we doing?" Probably channeling some of your rage and my rage and my utter disappointment in what our Supreme Court is doing these days. And she is talking again about the merits of this case down the road. She says, "You know, even if down the road, the petitioners here are not successful, this is not the way we litigate in America." And she's absolutely right about that. Let's, again, this shadow docket, once again, this emergency docket, where now we're doing everything, right? We begin the litigation. We put together one of those 180 injunctions that's now a part of your routine math on all of this, Maggie. And then what we do is we run to the Supreme Court and say, while this is all pending, stop all this or permit us to go back and put all this in place again. That's how litigation now at the highest levels of importance is being conducted today. And as you said, just under 1 million people now, it was a few days ago, now can be subject to removal, even while the underlying case, once again, is still not decided on the merits. It should be shocking for everyone.
And here's the thing, the emergency docket, and I guess there's two observations that I want to make about this. The first is Donald Trump will laud courts when he wins, and he will call for judges' impeachment by name when he loses. That's hogwash, right? Like, this is the role of the courts to take each case up. And assess it, to have these emergency interventions as individual judges or justices deem appropriate in their good faith objective interpretation of the law. That's our system. What I find really disturbing, Jim, about the Supreme Court's, what I'm just going to call, it is an objective fact when you analyze its use of the emergency docket and when the Supreme Court elects to intervene through this emergency shadow docket, there is no discernible, consistent set of principles that you can look to understand or explain the court's interventions. You simply can't. And it's not on the merits, because the Supreme Court over the last 15 years has done things that favored a party on its emergency docket and on the merits decided in favor of the other party. So that isn't even, not a sufficient amount of explanatory power, to put it in sort of economist terms. And the thing that I want people to understand about the shadow or emergency docket is that its use dates back to a time when it was nearly exclusively used in death penalty cases.
Yes.
And specifically, the posture was, if the Supreme Court could see that there were serious questions about actual innocence or serious process flaws.
Something that went to the trial, the merits of it, process, and you say,
if the person was actually guilty,
absolutely,
the process was so flawed that it would, frankly, erode public trust in criminal prosecutions writ large. This is when the court would say, listen, we're gonna keep the status quo, meaning we're going to keep
this
person
alive, right,
and not permit the state to change the facts by killing this person, so that we can ensure that the integrity of largely our criminal justice system is preserved, so that we preserve public trust. This was the positioning of these cases, without getting into the what is habeas and how does it work. Here's the point, the second point that I'm trying to make here, Jim, and I just want to get your reaction there too. And that is, not only is the court's decisions about what cases to accept and hear through its shadow emergency docket indecipherable, there's no discernible principle.
No consistency.
Its intervention and the outcomes, meaning whether it intervenes, whether it stops actions, are also not susceptible to any cogent, consistently applied set of principles. Meaning, if you simply take the principle of preserving the status quo and not permitting the government, before a case is fully litigated, to materially impact businesses or other people's lives, This is a case that shows you how deeply flawed this Supreme Court's view and embrace and use of the shadow docket is. These are people that could be disappeared overnight. It is nearly a million people. They were legal one day, not legal the next. Again, if you go back to that fundamental, like, hey, how did this used to be? What were the, how did the court use its powers historically? This is such a departure from that, ripping away protections, freedoms, etc., with no recourse for the people affected. It's such a departure, is it not?
It is absolutely that kind of departure. And your listeners, again, I'll use the word once again, should be outraged by this. Again, we go to the merits of this, of the process, the demerits of the process here, as Ketanji Brown-Jackson and others have said. And you don't see that consistency. One of the other things that I think is at the core of what you're saying, Maggie, is just this. Here's what you also lose. By doing this way, what are you losing? You're losing the opportunity to hear on briefs. Yes, that's right. Lawyers like us, we love to write things, right? You're not submitting the extensive briefs. You're not having those oral arguments in front of the court where Ketanji Brown-Jackson and Neil Gorsuch and all the others can spar and go back and forth and talk about the underlying merits, peek under the rug, if you will, as they talk about it. You're losing all of that process. And along the way, you lose, therefore, the humanity, candidate in a case like this. Supreme Court justices often look and say, these are real people, are they not? How can we deal with this in the best way to preserve their rights, their interests? You lose that opportunity. And the other thing American population loses, again, at number one, the top of this is 500,000 people, but secondarily, a sense of access to and transparency when it comes to government. Why is my, as you just said, why is my Supreme Court doing this? We don't know. And the consistency is simply not apparent. That is not good government, regardless of what branch you're part of. All of that process is missing here.
As Justice Jackson wrote in her dissent today, the court botched this assessment. It undervalues the devastating consequences of allowing the government to precipitously upend the lives and livelihoods of nearly 500,000 non-citizens while their legal claims are pending. She went on to warn that, quote, social and economic chaos will ensue if that many non-citizen parolees are suddenly and summarily remanded to their home countries. These people have integrated into American neighborhoods and communities in the hopes of eventually securing long-term legal status, and effectively their rights to have those cases heard in full on their merits have now been obliterated by a Supreme Court without consistent principle nor consistent application. It's not supposed to be this way. Your two Legal Eagles are here to help you through all the morass, all of the news. I got Jim Santel, former U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dwan, former court counsel from Milwaukee County, former federal court clerk for Judge Michael Caney in the Seventh Circuit. And this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.